You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for creatives and new bloggers hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, a freelance journalist and blogger living in London. In this episode, I chat to Monica Stott, aka The Travel Hack, about how she grew her business from a small hobby blog while she was travelling to one of the UK's top travel websites with a team of seven. She shares her growth game changers, which, let me tell you, are amazing game changers, and some seriously brilliant tips for working with brands. If you're the sort of person that wants to know how to make money blogging, or how to get more professional, how to get on your first press trip, this one is for you. A little FYI, my little girl was not napping while we did our interview, so you can hear her gurgling throughout some of the chat. I'm really, really sorry. And a lot towards the end. I hope it's not too distracting. And she also does a massive sneeze at one point, which means that you can't hear me or Monica, but it's like a split second. So I'm really sorry. So on with the chat. Welcome. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of the podcast. I'm sure everybody will know who you are, but if they don't, do you want to just go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about your journey to where you are today?
Yeah, okay. So I started blogging in 2009. It was when I went traveling. So originally I wanted to be a journalist. So before I went traveling, I was working for my local newspaper, and they had a section on their website which was for local bloggers. So they had like a local mum and a local teacher, and there was a local counsellor, and they asked me to write a blog. So I was kind of like the local girl that went traveling.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool, because if they hadn't asked me to do this, I never would have started a blog. I didn't even know what a blog was. And it actually sounds more amazing than it was. I think it got about 3 readers a week. Yeah, no one knew it was there. But it kind of made me feel quite special to be able to say I write for my local newspaper. Yeah. So, yeah, that kind of spurred me on, and it motivated me a bit more to do things properly, really. So I started this blog. I was traveling through Asia and Australia. At the time, it was called Me and My Backpack. Which is a name I actually really like, but I was never really sure grammatically if that was correct.
Yeah.
My backpack and I, which doesn't sound very good.
Yeah, it's not as catchy.
I always felt a bit uneasy with that name. And it was then when I came home in 2011 that I changed it to The Travel Hack. Uh-huh. So originally The Travel Hack, the name, as I wanted to be a journalist, I was studying journalism then. Hack was more about like a journalist.
Of course it was.
It wasn't really anything to do with travel hacks or travel hacking.
How interesting.
That wasn't really a thing at the time.
You kind of predicted it almost and then owned it.
Let's go with that.
Why not?
So then I came home, I moved to London, studied journalism, and then I started working for a travel startup. It was a travel website, kind of travel community, and I was the editorial assistant there. And this was around the time that social media was getting really big, and I took over the social channels for the website. And I loved it, absolutely loved it, but I really only did it because no one else wanted to do it. Then things went from there. So then I became the community manager for this website. And then I moved over to Flight Centre, which is a travel agent. And I was the UK social media manager there. Mm-hmm. And then I went freelancing social media. But this whole time as well, I was working on my blog and doing everything I could really to promote my blog. And everything kind of tied in together. Like the better my blog did, the better my career did. And the better my career did, it helped the blog. And all the networking events I went to were very connected. So the people I was meeting at these events helped my work, but also helped my blog. So everything grew together. And
I think there's a couple of really interesting points in there, actually, because so I would say networking is one of the best ways to get yourself started when you're a new blogger. And I know you, when you moved to London, you didn't really know
that many people, did you? And
I didn't know anyone. I didn't know any people, and I didn't have any money. I think about it now, that's so sad. I could have sacked myself. But I went to loads of networking events because it was a free night out, really, a free way to get drunk, a free way to get a meal, and the chance to meet loads of really nice and interesting people.
So was that Travel Massive and
Travel Massive and more like tourism events? Yeah. And, you know, PR events and that kind of thing.
I think a good thing to note, actually, if you are a new blogger, how you end up on the, once you end up on a PR list, and often it comes from maybe going to a Travel Massive event or a Traverse event or whatever, and definitely going to things like WTM, World Travel Market, you'll end up on a list and you'll be invited to so many events.
Yeah. Once you've been to four events, that's it then.
Yeah.
To everything.
So,
you really need to, but it's just getting that first one or
exactly,
two.
Exactly, yeah.
Once you're on a list, they just keep rolling in. But yeah, getting on the list in the first place can be a bit more difficult.
And the other thing you mentioned that I wanted to ask you about was social media. So obviously you were a social media manager and doing that for other people for almost properly, I would say.
I did it for brands and then I did it for freelance clients. So I know a lot of bloggers do freelance social media work and come at it really from the experience they've got solely through blogging.
Yeah.
I think doing it for a brand is so different.
Yeah.
So different to how a blogger does it. So it's quite nice to come at it from both sides, really.
And would you say that was a real kind of growth game changer for your blog as well when you started working in social media and learning things that almost the proper way, I guess.
To be honest, I know a lot of the theory but don't really apply it to my own blog, which I think is the case for a lot of things.
At the time,
I didn't really think my career was helping my blog as much as it did.
Yeah.
I think my career helped the blog more in terms of things like SEO and technical things. But in terms of social media, in some ways it helps, but it's more about the reporting, I think. That's the main...
Interesting.
Because I think a lot of bloggers don't really look at analytics that much.
Yeah.
Don't do like competitor analysis, don't look at what other people are doing.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, whereas when you're for a brand, that's what you spend half your day doing.
Yeah, and in the post analysis as well, not just the analysis to kind of inform what you're going to do next. What would you say the biggest tips that you've taken from your time as a social media manager that you apply to your blogging and your business?
It's something that I actually genuinely try to do. So every month I had to do a competitor analysis report for my boss. And I had to say, I work for Flight Centre, so I'd have to look at companies like Expedia or someone and say, well, they grew their book by 100,000 followers this month. And then my boss would turn around and say, well, what did they do? How did they do that? Why haven't you done that for us? How are you going to do that for us? Which is a bit scary.
Yeah, that is scary, but... Brilliant.
It really taught me to do that. And I don't really like thinking of other bloggers as competitors because it's not competitive and it doesn't need to be competitive. It's better to work together than be competitive. But, I mean, you can take the theory, though, and look at competitors or people who are doing the same kind of thing with the same kind of audience and look what they're doing each month and see how they're growing each month and try and do things a little bit better.
And how would you identify a competitor? And I'll probably say in inverted commas because you're right. If you've nailed down your own niche or whatever, then it's not a competitor in the same way as it would be a brand competitor, but someone else in your field that you admire, I guess, that you want to look to. How do you nail down those people? Not literally, that sounds really aggressive. How do you nail them down and get rid of them so that you win?
I sort of think of two types of, again, I feel like calling them competitors is the wrong word.
It is,
And there's the people who I would say are the same as me, who have a similar audience, similar size audience, and are blogging for the same kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily always travel bloggers, I don't think. It's more bloggers who are blogging for my kind of people.
Yeah.
So I consider those to be competitors. But then there's the other competitor who is the kind of blogger that I'm aspiring to be like, who I would use more like inspiration, I suppose.
Oh,
and look
at
what they're doing and think, oh, that's amazing, I want to do that.
Because we all do that. We all do that subconsciously anyway, don't we? So
it's kind of doing it strategically.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great tip.
And yeah, that's fun.
What sort of things would you use to do that? What sort of analytics would you use? I guess some bloggers out there will know. I know I use, or I used to use Iconosquare, which has a really, really good competitor analysis.
Well, I'm quite old school, and I just have a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do this formally every month, but it's something that I would recommend to do, and I try and do. Just have a spreadsheet with, like, I don't know, say 10 to 15 of your competitors, and have things like Twitter followers, Facebook followers, Instagram followers, number of blog posts each month, and just fill it in each month and just see how much they're growing.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. This has really inspired me, actually. I don't do anything like this. I'm very lazy.
It's one of those things each month. It feels like it's going to be a chore. And then you start doing it and think, oh, actually, this is really interesting. It's just nice to be able to catch up on what they're doing. And sometimes you'll spot something and you'll see, like, they've gained like 10,000 new followers in a month. And you look at what they've done and you see that they've done a competition or something, or they've done something in a certain way, or they've really upped their game at something, and you think, wow, fair play, you know, they've done something really good here. And it's just good to be aware of that.
Yeah,
I think it's good
to keep yourself accountable as well.
Well, yeah, that's true. Mm. But one thing I think I'm really scared of in blogging is falling behind.
Me too.
Being better. And I think when you haven't got a boss to report to, it could happen so easily. Yes. If you sort of take your eyes off the ball for a while, things change so quickly.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good way of keeping up to date with everything, knowing what everyone's doing, and making sure that you're doing it too, or doing it first.
So you've got a brilliant course, which we've talked about in quite a few of the episodes of What She Said. So anybody listening out there, if you listen to the first one with Jen Lothrop, she's done the course and she had some great things to say about it. How did your course come about? I kind of imagine in my head that you just get stacks and stacks of emails from people asking you advice.
Yeah, that's kind of how it started. Yeah. So through getting lots of emails, and then I started writing blog posts about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to be one of those bloggers that blogs about blogging.
Yeah.
And it's quite tempting to do, because whenever I blog about blogging, it gets loads of traffic.
I know, yeah.
Share it and everything. So then I thought, well, I'll make like a series of posts about it, maybe an email series or something. And then as I started writing it, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it just turned into a beast. And I thought, this is ridiculous. This is huge.
Mm.
But I also realized that it was really valuable, and there was a lot of really good stuff in there. And it took me nearly a year to write it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did have a baby in that time.
Oh, so. Yes.
So, yeah, it took a really long time. And, yeah, it was, like, so much work. It turned into something much bigger than I thought.
Yeah.
But I thought, because I've got so much here, it just seemed right to turn it into an e-course.
And how is that? I mean, I've heard a lot of amazing things about it so far. How have you found the response?
Amazing, absolutely amazing, better than I thought it would mm-hmm. be. It's just so nice to know that, like, I'm genuinely helping people.
Yeah.
And there's a few people who've done the course, and after they finished it, they've like quit their jobs and gone full-time as bloggers, which is terrifying. Wow. that people are doing that based on my advice. But it's really cool, and I think just helping people to do what they want to do is so much more rewarding than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much fun. It's so nice as well. And it's so nice to hear from people who will say things like, oh, well, I took that tip and I've done this, and, oh, I've, you know, doubled my income and things like that. Because I wanted to write it for so many amazing bloggers out there doing really amazing things, but just don't really know how to make any money from it.
Yeah. And actually, I would say that you are one of the kind of experts on that. You speak about making money as a blogger at a lot of conferences. I've seen you speak a few times, and you're brilliant. So but you're one of the only people out there who actually talks about it and says, this is how I make money, this is how I have made money, this is how you could make money. And that's really interesting. What I think quite a lot of people as well, I know that when bloggers ask me, newer bloggers ask me, well, how they literally just want to know, do you make £50 a month or do you make £1,000? Like, can I do this? They just want a ballpark, a kind of starting block.
And I think a lot of the bloggers that record their incomes, you get two sides of it. You get ones who literally make like £100 a month and then ones who are making like £200,000 a month.
Yeah, like Melissa Griffin, who's making millions.
Yeah, exactly. And she blogs Making Sense of Sense. And she makes like crazy money. And it's amazing to read it. And it is something to aspire to. But like, if you're just starting out, like, it's not really very realistic. And I think to get a realistic guide to what you can earn and how much you can charge and what you should do. And yeah, I agree, not many people talk about it. Mm. And I'm not sure if it's because they're not really earning much money and don't want to say that, or they're earning a lot of money and don't want to share their secrets.
I think it's probably a bit of both. Yeah, I would probably say it's a bit of both because, yeah, the less people talk about it, the more people think there's some big mystery out there that you should be earning this much or that person's probably earning this much. And you're right, the people who do talk about it and publish income reports, the majority of them are earning millions.
Yeah.
So you kind of think, oh, God, I'm not earning that much. I'm definitely not going to tell people that I earn less than that. What would you say is the biggest game changer in terms of making money? Because one of the things that I've found is a bit of a misconception is passive income, the types of passive income you can earn. I think people think that to make money as a blogger, regardless of how you make it, you need loads of traffic. And like that, I would say that's a misconception.
Yeah, definitely. You don't need loads of traffic at all. But yeah, I agree. You don't need loads and loads of traffic. It just needs to be targeted traffic, which is why I know that you don't really agree with this. But for me, having a niche is really important. I'm sorry.
Sorry to interrupt. But in terms of having a niche, yes, I am quite outspoken on the fact that I don't believe you need a niche. But I would say that the way you talk about niche is I agree with, because
but I don't think niche has to be like budget travel.
Exactly. Yeah.
Something. That isn't always your niche. I think sometimes your niche is who your audience are.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree. I think that's mostly that's sort of where I think I don't believe in using the terminology of niche in the way that so many travel courses out there use it. Because then people come away and think, oh, travel, that's a niche, and it's not.
Yeah, no, not at all. Whereas I think, so for you, for example, I'm guessing that it's your audience. It's the type of probably woman that you are blogging for. And, you know, they might like travel, but they might be new mums. They might be freelancers. It's a certain type of person who has more than one interest, just like you have more than one interest. So I think sometimes thinking of, your niche as your audience is valuable.
Yeah, I agree. And, thinking about your kind of dream person, your dream reader, really.
Yeah, but back to the whole thing about sort of, like passive income.
Mm.
If you're blogging for a certain type of person and you mention a product that that person is going to like, you know, it doesn't matter if 1 million people read it or if 200 people read it. Well, no, actually, that doesn't make sense, because if 1 million people read it, you'd be doing really well.
I know what you mean, though.
Really targeted people reading it is more valuable than having millions of people reading it with the majority of them not being interested.
Yeah, totally. And I think, actually, people forget that having an email list is actually can be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it's all about the email list, because people choose to subscribe to that and they choose to open it.
Yeah.
So maybe not as many people are reading it as might read your blog, but the people who do read it love it.
Yes.
And are so engaged in it. So, yeah, they're like a really valuable load of people.
How do you, because you've got a newsletter, haven't you? You haven't had it for a really long time, though.
Well,
a couple of years.
Yeah. I didn't start it from the beginning. And I didn't realise how important it was for such a long time, because I saw so many people saying, oh, it's so valuable. It's hard to tell, because you send it out and people read it and that's it.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, I started trying to make a conversation out of it. So I would always put in the newsletter, like, oh, email me back if you've got anything to say, or, you know, just please email back and say something. And now that I try and encourage conversations through it, I get a lot of people reply to the email, and it feels more like a conversation. It's more of a one-on-one as well, and I think people really like it as well if they email me back and then I reply to them and we have a bit of a chat, and it's really time consuming.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it's really nice, and I think that's what blogs are about. It's about talking to people.
Yeah.
And a newsletter doesn't have to be you just talking at people. It can be a way to start a conversation.
Are there, because I listened to the podcast that you did with Kat Molesworth for Blogtacular, and you mentioned briefly brands sponsoring your newsletter.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even thought of that at all. And I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think more and more brands want to do this as well, where it would be more of a natural thing. I mean, sometimes they do ask to sort of take over the whole newsletter and the whole newsletter be dedicated to a brand. But I've never done that, because I've never worked with a brand that closely where I feel like that kind of takeover would work.
Yeah.
To be such an amazingly perfect fit.
Yeah.
And I haven't had that yet, but it'll be more like, say if you put a product of the month in the newsletter, that kind of thing.
I see. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, which actually can lead to more click-throughs than would if you mentioned it on a blog post.
Yeah, I can completely imagine that.
Yeah.
Because like you say, your newsletter tend to be if they're opening the newsletter, because open rates are obviously the thing that you want, the stat that you want to be tracking for your newsletter.
Yeah.
If they're opening it, then they're already like, I don't know, 10 times more engaged than they are if they're just on your blog reading.
Yeah, definitely. They're not just skimming through it. They've chosen to open it. And when you talk about open rates as well, that's another thing. It's so much more important to have maybe fewer subscribers but a higher open rate. Especially once you get to the number of subscribers where you have to start paying quite a lot of money to them. Because if not many of them are opening it and you're paying for this huge list, it's just such a waste of your money. So I quite often send out an email like, oh, you haven't opened an email for a while. Do you still want to be subscribed? So it's just a nice way to either get rid of people who aren't interested and you don't have to pay for them then, or to sort of give people a little kick up the bum and say, hi, I'm here.
Yeah. I do the same thing. And I have a much smaller list than you, but I find that really helps, because I'm at the stage now, just at the stage where I pay for my subscribers. And when I see the people that haven't opened it, I'm like, no, I'm not paying for you.
Get off my list.
Yeah, go away. Another thing that I do with my newsletter, and I wondered if you did it too, was when someone's newly subscribed, that's kind of when they're at their most engaged. That's when they've discovered you and they've probably gone to all your social and they want to know everything about you. Mm-hmm. Do you have a tailored kind of email that goes out to those people, like the new people, they're in for a week?
Do you know what? I actually don't, but I really should, because I know exactly what you mean. You know, sometimes you get them when you subscribe and they'll send you one saying, here's the most popular post, check these out.
Yeah.
If you want to know about me, check out this page. If you want to know about my latest trip, check out this. Yeah, that's such a good idea.
That's what I do. And I found that the open rate for that is like 90%. It's incredible. And it's just a, here's my story, here's more about me.
Yeah.
I'm Lucy, I'm et cetera, et cetera. And I think it maybe even was Melissa Griffin, who has a kind of really complex, hardcore funnel that you push people through, you know, with, you send them this email and then another one and another one, you know, here's my, you know, over a kind of a month, you have a series of emails that lead to kind of getting them on a course. But yeah, I found it brilliant. It's actually really satisfying as well, because sometimes people reply to the email and like, oh, I didn't realise that about you or whatever. And
yeah, oh, that's nice. Maybe I need to do that.
And it's really easy, actually, for people listening. If you use MailChimp, it's really, really easy to kind of cut your subscribers into various different demographics. I think there's like a paid version and a non-paid version, but in the basic free version, I think even you can just say like people who subscribed in the past 5 days, 7 days, whatever, and also people who open a lot, people who don't open. So you can do all those sorts of things to keep your newsletter nice and clean, keep your list nice and clean.
Yeah, I love MailChimp.
Yeah, I do.
And it's just so easy.
Really easy. What has been the biggest growth game changer for your blog?
I think that, so this is a really weird one and something that you wouldn't expect at all, but it was when I had my first son, George. Obviously I was really busy with him, so I kind of, I didn't take on as much work, and I only took on the jobs that I really, really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And that changed everything, because before that, I basically said yes to everything, anything and everything. I squeezed in as much as I possibly could. And if there was a little gap in my diary, anything could be squeezed in there. And obviously things changed when I got a bit busier. Mm-hmm. I was really selective about what I worked on. I upped my fees a lot because I could. And that was just such a game changer.
Oh, that's really interesting. And that's a really, really good lesson, especially for newer bloggers who maybe have just been offered, like we were talking about, once you're on a list, you're on a list. Yeah. And if you go on one press trip, sometimes you can be asked on absolutely stacks. If you say yes to every single one,
you get invited on more and more and more.
Yeah. Do you think it was such a growth game changer because you didn't have sponsored content or press trip content wasn't like your sole content?
Yeah, I think it was a mixture of everything. It was that there wasn't as much sponsor content and press trips, and particularly, I don't really like press trips, to be honest. So
no, I don't.
Yeah, there was less of that, but it was more in terms of being able to make money, I think, and being much more selective about mm-hmm. things and just working on the things that were 100% a really good fit for the blog. Yeah, that definitely changed things. And not being afraid to say no to things, because 9 times out of 10, say if someone emails you and says, do you want to do this? This is the budget we've got for it. And 9 times out of 10, if you say no, my fee is higher than that, they always manage to find a bit more.
Yes.
Being able to say no to things makes it easier, because before I was just too scared to say no to anything because you don't know when that opportunity is going to come again. So I was just saying yes to everything. But I think as soon as you start saying no, obviously people will up their budgets, but also it makes you seem like you're much more in demand.
Yeah, that's very, very true, I think.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, isn't it? When you know that everyone else wants a bit of that blogger, you want it as well.
Yeah, it's true. That's very, very true. I think not being afraid to say no, I think is really important. And obviously I can understand if you feel, if you know, you've got bills to pay and you need to take this, you feel like you need to take it to pay the bills. But actually, if you say no to one press trip, you will be invited on another. And like you say, more often than not, they'll just pay what you need anyway.
Yeah. And I think as well, bloggers who also have full-time jobs, I worry so much about missing out on things and saying too much, but actually it's probably the best thing ever, because if you say, look, I can only do one thing a month, you're going to get really in demand. People are going to be like, right, we need to book her up, we need to get her in, we need to pay her a higher fee because everyone else wants her, you know. So it's not always a bad thing. Don't worry about being a people pleaser.
Because that's a really good lesson.
Yeah,
that's a really good lesson, because I know that I've definitely suffered from that as well. I think a lot of people do at the beginning when you just, and it's really exciting as well. Going back to press trips and you saying you don't do them, I don't do them either. And obviously you're from a journalist background. I've gone the other way, gone blogger to journalist, but press trips as a journalist, I will do because they're so different to doing a press trip as a blogger. I know you're not part of any collectives or anything, are you?
Not really. Well, I'm sort of part of one called the Travel Mob, which isn't really as formal as others, but that's an amazing one because the guy who started it, Duncan Rhodes, who runs Urban Travel Blog, I think it's called, he hates press trips, like probably hates them and thought there was way. So what we tend to do now is we work with tourism boards and we all go out at the same time, but we all do our own thing.
That's perfect.
Yeah, and we organise our own itineraries, and so we'll all go out together, but everyone will stay in a different hotel according to what their audience like. Everyone will do different activities and go off and do different things, and then we'll all come together in the evening and, you know, have a bit of a debrief and have fun and have dinner together.
That's kind of the perfect press trip, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. That's exactly how it should work.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't always work like that because quite often tourism boards have partners and they have specific things they want you to push. But we've done a few trips where the tourism boards have really tried to push certain activities and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it's not something that you'd normally blog about, if you do get forced to blog about it, it's just not very fun. It's not very natural. And you could spend your time doing something so much better. Well, you'd think, in a way, it'd be easier for them. Just say, destination, here's a list of activities you could potentially do. Tell us what you're interested in. And we'll just do it. Because I think they think that you need to have your hand held. But actually, it's when you get lost or when you... You know, when you do something wrong, that's what makes the best stories, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think you do press trips in the same way or work with brands in a similar way that I like to, in that you will organise things yourself. So I tend to pay for my flights.
And get things covered in the destination. Yeah, I tend to do that too.
It's just easier, especially, I mean, you've got two children and I presume you often will travel with your husband as well as your two children. And
It's just easier, especially flying with kids. Yeah. Because if you work with an airline and you have to blog about the flight, so, you've already got your hands full with two children.
Yeah.
And then you've got to blog about it as well, and it's just a nightmare. So I'd rather pay just enjoy the flight.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, that leads us to motherhood. So you've got two children now and you work full time and you're kind of my hero. How do you do it? But also, how has your travel style changed?
I'm very tired. I don't really know. So it's just this month that my youngest started at nursery. And for the first month, they're both in nursery 4 full days. And that's because I've just had a really, really busy month. And next month's really busy as well. But obviously 4 full days at nursery for two little ones, it costs so much. But also I don't really like it. So Joseph, who's 8 months, he's just started crawling and things. And I'm not there every day to see that. So I don't really like that. So it was actually just this morning that I've sort of downgraded them at nursery and they're just going to go for 2 days. Because I just think this little age that they're at now is so important and I don't want to miss it. And they're going to be in school soon.
Yeah.
So I think first and foremost, they come first. And I love my job more than, well, not more than anything, not more than them. And I feel so lucky that I can do this. And getting to travel and just do what I love every day is amazing. But I'm going to sort of try and just focus on them while they're so little. Mm-hmm. And then when they go back, when they start at school, that's when I'll really, really focus on the blog. But it's nice as well being able to be flexible like this. So June and July are really busy. August and September, I'm going to keep quite quiet. And then October, November might get busy again. So it's nice to be able to, spend a lot of time with them and then change and spend a lot of time working. I don't really know how I manage. I just work a lot in the evenings. My family are amazing. My partner's absolutely amazing. He's very, saying that he's supportive sounds wrong, because of course he's supportive of my career, but he's very much like, come on, you're a travel blogger. If you don't travel, you're not a travel blogger.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. And it makes me feel like I don't feel guilty about going away and leaving him with the kids.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah. So, was that
a fear when, cause that's certainly a fear of mine. I mean, I know I'm not a travel blogger in the same way that you are at all, but I am a travel blogger. So,
yeah.
But I do worry sometimes that, you know, the last bit of travel content I did was in January, which is a long time ago.
Yeah, well, that's the reason for me why I took on like the Travel Hack team.
Yes.
To fill the gaps when I wasn't going away, and so that I didn't feel the pressure to go away when I didn't want to. And also so that it didn't turn into like more like a personal lifestyle blog.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love those kind of blogs, but the Travel Hack is and always will be a travel blog. And if someone's not traveling, it's not that.
Yeah.
So that's why I took on the team, who are absolutely amazing.
And you've recently won an award, haven't you?
Yeah, last week we won the Cheap Flights Award for the UK's favourite travel blog.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, that was a lovely one.
So how many? There's quite a few of you now, isn't there?
Yeah, so there's seven of us now.
Oh, seven. Cool. And yeah. I think I know everybody, but if anybody doesn't know who they are, would you mind going through and introducing them?
We have Elle Croft, who also has her travel blog, A Bird in the Hand. And Elle has just had her first novel published.
Yes, so exciting. The Guilty Wife. I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, so she's amazing. And then we have Elizabeth Sellers, who runs a blog, Rosalilium. She's sort of lifestyle-y and travel-y, and she's amazing too. And then we have Shah, who runs Taylor Hearts Travels. And she is pregnant with her second baby.
Yeah.
And then we have Amy, who she's in, I think she's in Canada at the minute, or maybe the States.
she's a jet setter.
And she has a blog called Bambi Jane Travels. And then we have Steph and Leah, who are the newest members to the team. And they are absolutely amazing. And Steph is more of a writer and Leah is a professional photographer.
Oh, wow. So
together really nicely. And they've just done a big trip around Australia together. So, yeah, they're really cool as well. So it's really nice, actually. We've just started sort of arranging more meetups and chances for us all to get together, because we have so much fun when we're together.
It's like the ultimate girl gang. I want to be part of that girl gang.
Yeah, we want to show this more. We want to show how much fun we have together. So yeah, we're going to be doing more group trips together.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that should be fun.
How have you found the transition going from? I mean, you've had people writing for the Travel Hack for quite a long time now, but the transition from your voice to lots of voices?
Sometimes I found it quite hard, especially in the early days when I was getting feedback from regular readers who were saying, you know what, we just prefer your posts, we just want to read about you.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the bigger picture, having more content is better overall. It attracts more readers. We can cover more categories, and a lot of people now are saying that they love the fact that we have so much content from so many different areas. And it's nice for me as well. Like, I think people underestimate how hard it is to run a blog by yourself.
Yeah.
And even though it's obviously still like my business, and I'm very much like I run everything, but it's nice to have a team to say, oh, you know, what do you think of this? Do you think we should do this? Do you think we should do that? Have you got any ideas on this? It's just so nice to have that.
Yeah.
And to feel more like I have colleagues that are just as interested in the blog as I am.
Yeah, it can be, when people talk about wanting to be a full-time blogger, it is quite lonely.
Yeah, really lonely.
Yeah, the amount that you have to do yourself with no input is pretty scary.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to bounce around some ideas, and sometimes you just want someone just to say, yeah, that's a good idea, do that.
Yeah.
Just keep you on track. Well, for me, I have just have so many ideas and so many things I want to do. Sometimes I just need someone to pull me back and say, just focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, actually, with working for yourself, is that you don't have anybody there holding you accountable for that one task that you need to do, and you can just veer off on a tangent. I suppose because we're all, naturally, we're creatives, it can sometimes be hard to, like, sit us down and say, stop it. You need to calm down.
I have to write myself a to-do list every day. Because if I haven't got a list, like, God, I could end up doing anything.
Yes.
Literally anything, like the most random things ever.
Yeah, I'm the same. And actually, since having an IS, I haven't been officially working. So I've been like, oh, I'm not going to use my to-do list. But that has meant that I've been just veering off, doing the most nutty things for hours at a time.
I think it's nice, though, like, for you in your situation now on maternity leave, like, you can do that. And that's really lovely. And I do think it's important to do that sometimes as well. But then other times when you've got clients.
So yeah, like, exactly.
That you've got to stick to the to-do list.
In terms of when you've taken on work with a brand or with in any kind of way, because that I know that's what most of the people listening to this will probably want to know. So they've had their first kind of bit of paid work, be it a sponsored post or a press strip or whatever. There's two things that I know that you've said that I've really taken on board that are such brilliant, brilliant pieces of advice. And one of them is under promise and over deliver. So don't be that person that's like, I'm going to do 10 posts for you and 25 Instagrams and et cetera, et cetera. Under promise and then do that little bit more.
Yeah.
And then also the follow up of how you present the analysis to them afterwards. Would you be able to talk a little bit about that and your tips for smashing it, basically?
As well, that I think has come from like my old jobs. Mm-hmm. About the reporting on things that you've done, because sometimes the report is more important than it's the most important thing, because if you can prove that what you did was valuable, that brand will want to work with you again. Yeah. But also if you write a report, you can then use that to present to other brands and say, I've done this in the past, these are the results, and you can make them want to work with you as well. So, yeah, so I always do reports when I work on paid campaigns anyway. And sometimes it can be really basic. It can just be like how many page views it got, things like Twitter impressions and Facebook, and, you know, how many likes it got on Instagram. And so I think the most important thing is screenshotting the comments that you're getting. So things like, say, if you went on holiday somewhere and someone messaged you and said, you know what, I'd never thought of going there, or... Yeah. This has inspired me to book it, or thanks for this review, I've just booked it, I'm going there. Comments like that are absolute gold dust.
Yeah, because that just proves your worth immediately, doesn't it, really?
And I think, well, everyone wants to be an influencer, so you have to prove that you are influencing.
Yeah.
I think as well, though, because it's so new to brands as well, brands don't know what they can ask for.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, quite often I get a brand saying, oh, you know, I'm going to be really cheeky now and feel free to say no, but can you send me a shot of your Google Analytics?
So yeah.
And I'm like, that's not cheeky. That's what you're paying me for.
Yeah. That's so true.
I think a lot of brands just don't realise that we can do this, and things like trackable links as well.
Yeah.
Brands quite often don't give me a trackable link, so they can't really see how many people are clicking the links that I'm putting out there. Whereas if they give me a trackable link and I can prove that I'm sending, say, 500 visitors to their website, and then they can go back to their boss and say, you know, we worked with this blogger, she sent 500 people to us, and out of those people, 50 of them bought something. You know, it's just good to be able to say that, even if the numbers aren't enormous.
Yeah.
It's just good to be able to prove that you are doing something and you are making a difference to their business. It's about brand awareness and things as well. And obviously a lot of what bloggers do can't be tracked. And, you know, you might mention a brand and then 3 years later someone might be like, oh, yeah, I remember reading about that. Oh, yeah, I'll have a look at that. And then they might end up booking something massive.
Yeah, that's true.
You just don't know. But I think... Yeah, when it comes to things like that, as long as you're just creating things that you're really proud of and you know has the potential to influence people, I think that's what's important. And I think it's hard, especially now that brands have bigger budgets to work with bloggers, And if someone comes to you and says, you know, I'm going to offer you loads of money to do this, hard to say no if it's not like totally fits with your brand. But I think the more that you do and the more you only work with brands that really fit, the better it is.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good place to end it. So thank you very, very much for being part of the podcast. And where can everybody find you online?
Oh, so they can find me at The Travel Hack. And then my blog, of course, is very imaginatively named The Blog, of course.
I love that it's called that. Great SEO.
Clever. But then I thought, SEO.
Yeah. And I'll link to everything in the show notes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. And if you like this episode or any of the other episodes, please think about giving me a lovely rating on iTunes. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with me, head over to my blog, wanderloose.com, or hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest, where I'm at wanderlooseblog.